Every child has a right to a safe, healthy, peaceful childhood and to develop to their full potential. Today's children are tomorrow's leaders, tomorrow's presidents and prime ministers, tomorrow's teachers and innovators. How can we work together to best support and protect the children of the world?
Hello, I'm Gavin Freeborn and welcome to Original Ideas, a podcast from the University of Liverpool. In this series, we're looking at academic research, the impact it has on society, the benefits it brings, and how research can positively shape the future. For this episode, we're exploring another important topic of research, children's rights. Protecting children is something that should be paramount in every society. However, we see many issues across the globe where this doesn't happen. So how can academic research facilitate and enable children's legal rights?
Why is the media using these children? This is not the children's job. The children should have a lot of rights, and the Syrian children, they have nothing.
That's Kinda Ali speaking about her thought-provoking journey and research on the use of children's images by the media during war. We'll hear from Kinda later. However, first, let's meet Professor Helen Stalford, Head of Department at Liverpool Law School here at the university. Helen is a leading expert on European children's rights. Her writing and books on children's rights and welfare in the European Union are integral reading on the subject. Helen tells us about her work on children's rights and how academic research makes an impact across the world. Great to meet you, Helen, and thank you very much for coming onto the podcast. So first of all, we're going to start with finding out about the main aim of your work.
So I work in the field of children's rights as part of international and domestic human rights work, and I'm particularly interested in looking at children's access to justice, how they enforce those rights in practice, so how we can make rights on paper translate into meaningful change for children's lives. So I'm particularly interested in migrant children, how they are treated in different legal processes, how they are given voice, how their rights are affected by movement across borders, both chosen movement as well as forced movement across borders. So I've worked a lot in relation to asylum-seeking children and young people and their experiences of the asylum system in the UK. And the work that we also do looks at how the International Children's Rights Framework, which is very explicit, it's globally ratified, it's very comprehensive, translates into domestic provision and entitlement.
What would you say the biggest challenge is in this work?
So it's really easy to sit down as an academic and look at in a doctrinal way how those rights all feed through into our domestic law and policy. But the real insights come from listening to children talk about their experiences of justice, their experiences of life. And the challenges, I guess, have been trying to get access to those voices in a way that is enhancing and rewarding for children and young people, that genuinely gives them a voice in a way that leads to some kind of change, if not just in their own lives, but changes to law, policy and process and practice. So what we've done in terms of our research has been to design participatory projects over the years, which have taken children's experiences and views as a starting point for our research, not just in terms of responding to the questions that we set, but in terms of really enabling them to set our research agendas. So what are the priorities for children and young people in the here and now, rather than what we think as researchers or practitioners might be their priorities? So that's been a challenge, but a really important motivation for the work that we do.
So tell us about a key partner that you're working with.
Well, our current work is really around children's rights in the hostile environment. So how the current immigration framework in the UK is affecting children. So in order to investigate that properly, we work with charities, NGOs that work directly with those young people affected. And in one of the most recent projects that we've been running, which is called Lives on Hold, Our Stories Told, we've been working with a really amazing charity called Shpresa, down in London. And Shpresa supports the Albanian community in the UK, and they support numerous asylum-seeking children and young people. And it won't be any surprise to know that the Albanians are probably the most vilified immigrant community at the moment in the UK. They have very limited rights. Their rights have been even more diminished in the last couple of years through new legislation, which even fails to recognise now Albanians as asylum seekers. There's a narrative in the press around Albanians coming over to the UK merely to exploit our asylum system. And that is completely at odds with what we've been finding through our research, particularly with unaccompanied asylum seeking children and young people from Albania. So this charity have been a really important source of learning for us. We've been able to access not just groups or members of the Albanian community to take part in our research, but they've supported us in nurturing some of these young people to actually be co-researchers. So we started by building a relationship with them even before we got any funding to do the project. We really wanted to understand their priorities for research, their priorities for policy and legal change. And we took their perspectives and experiences as the starting point for designing our project. And we worked with them over the course of a year to design a participatory project, which would really sort of dig deep into these issues of how it's the systems and processes in the UK, and particularly the justice system, delays, hostility amongst different practitioners, particularly within the Home Office, that compounds the trauma that has led them to seek asylum in the first place. So we really wanted to dig deep into that, not just with the Albanian community, but with other communities of asylum seekers. And so Shpresa have been a really important source of support for these young people, a source of learning for us on how to do really good strategic partnerships within research. And we committed to carrying out that project, whether or not we got funding. But the nature of the partnership, the quality of the research questions and methods that we could generate from that very bottom-up approach meant that we secured funding relatively easily, really, to do a 2-year project with 69 young asylum seekers unaccompanied to really understand progress on their cases. And we continue to work with them now in looking at where those young people are at today.
Yeah, that sounds very, very powerful. Mm. And could you tell us about some of the issues that these children have been experiencing in Albania, the reasons, you know, for them to migrate?
Well, it's complicated. I think that's the difficulty with the narratives around these issues, is that there is no one single reason often for a young person to move, and even in a forced context. So there might be enormous economic deprivation in a particular region that exposes children and young people to exploitation, to abuse, because systems and structures are just not equipped to respond to their needs. They then become incredibly vulnerable to such an extent that they actually do fall within the definition of asylum seekers, and they can then be forced to move to escape forced marriage, trafficking, other forms of exploitation. They are in fear of persecution and abuse from a whole range of different actors. And so it's a complicated accumulation of different factors that force these young people to slip between different kinds of legal definitions, if you like, but end up in the asylum system and need asylum in order to stay safe. And I think that the media narrative around that has very much focused on the young adults, male, really, who's just trying to exploit the system in order to get economic advantage, to get access to kind of better employment opportunities. But our experience of that has been that they come genuinely in need of protection from persecution or exploitation. They're often trafficked. They then come to the UK, are not sufficiently protected by the system because they're not seen as sufficiently in need of protection, and that makes them more vulnerable to exploitation in the UK. So many of them end up not being placed in appropriate accommodation with a foster family. They are put into semi-regulated independent accommodation, often with adults. They are then vulnerable to grooming and recruitment to gangs. They then become involved in drugs. They might become involved in illegal work. And then they secure a criminal conviction, which puts them on a really negative trajectory and vulnerable then to deportation because they have a criminal record.
And what impact has been made so far?
Well, it's always very difficult to pinpoint the impact of your research. We like to think that we're having some kind of impact, but of course it's a tiny drop in the ocean in what is a very hostile environment. We've used our evidence for parliamentary debates by Baroness Lister in the House of Lords against the most recent legislation, the Illegal Migration Bill. We've used our evidence to support strategic litigation before the courts. So we work very closely with lawyers to try and transpose the evidence that we've collected into compelling witness statements that can then support litigation before the courts to enhance the rights of individuals, which then might have an impact then on other individuals with similar experiences in that community. So strategic litigation, parliamentary debates, but I think the most important impact for us is the human impact. We've learned such a lot about how vulnerability, how they've turned their own vulnerability into an enormous strength, the insights that they've had, that they've been able to bring to bear on our conversations with other young asylum seekers. So we've learned a lot because we've been so touched by their stories, but their strength, their ability to contribute to the welfare and stories of other people, despite their own difficulties. All of these young asylum seekers are still in the asylum and modern slavery system, and yet they're able to commit in a really impressively professional way as co-researchers. And I think it's had an impact on their lives, if I might say that, because they've had some sense of purpose beyond their own asylum struggle. They've been involved in a project that has clear aims and objectives. They've been able to acquire the skills and knowledge from being part of a research community that has equipped them to go on to apply for university, to apply for scholarships to attend university. One of them has managed to get a scholarship to do a master's here, and she's also applying for a scholarship to do a PhD. So the important lesson for us has been the value of not just working with people with lived experience as respondents in our research, but empowering them to set research agendas and to pursue research careers in ways that are so much more empowering, not just for them, but for us as a kind of community of researchers working on asylum and immigration.
Can you tell us what your biggest goal is for the future?
I think as social justice researcher, I see myself as wholly committed to the pursuit of social justice through research and education. And I think what I've really learned in more recent years is the importance of our strategic partnerships, that we can do some good work in an academic silo, but we're quite limited in what we can do unless we can form these networks, build relationships of trust, and learn with our strategic partners, whether it's lawyers, civil society organisations, those with lived experience, parliamentarians, government officials. If we can form these kinds of strategic partnerships from the outset, and including with the media, then we can achieve our social justice goals much more effectively than if we were to just work in our silos in a kind of more ad hoc way that relies a bit on chance encounters.
Yeah, thank you very much. And it strikes me that there's a lot of different people who are working together to really help to change the world for a positive. And thank you for joining us to tell us about your work. We look forward to following it in the future. Thank you very much, Helen.
Thank you.
Thanks again to Professor Helen Stalford talking through her experiences of using academic research to drive positive change for children's rights. Interesting to see the many ways in which academic research can impact this important topic. So that's the view of a professor. Now let's meet Liverpool PhD student Kinda Ali to hear her incredible story. Originally from Syria, Kinda lived through the Syrian war and witnessed the terrible suffering of refugees. After completing a master's degree in international journalism, Kinda started her research work focusing on the use of children's images by the media during war. Kinda discusses her work with us and we find out more about her journey.
Great to meet you, Kinda. Thank you very much for coming to speak to us. Can you first of all tell us about yourself and your background and your journey into academia?
I'm from Syria. I arrived to England in 2015 as a refugee, and the journey, it wasn't that easy. I found myself with little girl. She was my daughter. She was just 1 year old. New language, new country. I don't know anyone. I don't know anything about this place. But from the beginning, I have a goal. I still all time feel, okay, I'm improving my goal, but all time I have a goal to know the language, because I was just speak very basic English when I arrived here. I wasn't that speak much English. I start to improve my language. I decided to continue my study because I already finished my degree in media and the first step to do my master's. After a long journey, I'm being in the university. I finished my master's in international journalism. And after that, I said, okay, now it's really what I want to do, to continue my PhD about the research I'm really so interested, so passionate to do. It's the children in war. This is my area. I lived the war in Syria. All time when I watch news, when I'm in England, I see it. I'm watching completely different war. The war in Syria on the land, it's completely different. Anything we can see on media, it's completely different. The reality, it's different. I said, okay, it's part of my job to show the real stories about the people who is suffering. I lived whole journey to be in hostels, to be in camps, to be without any shelters, to be with nothing, with no money, nothing, really, no paper, no passport, nothing. And I can say most of the people arriving here, they lost their country, they lost everything. And I just all time when I am in university, or because I'm working with many organizations, as with organization working with women, with refugees, I all time want to show everyone that we are here because we really want to be here to do something. And this is part of the story.
That's wonderful. Thank you very much for telling us about your journey. And so tell us more about your research, Kinda, around the use of images of children in war.
The idea started when once my daughter, she came from school, she was 7 years old. She said it was Refugees Week and they watched news in the school. And she said, Mommy, I can't believe how anyone can film these children when they are dying. Just a few words she said, it really stuck in my head. How anyone can just filming the people when they are hurting, when they are suffering, really suffering without nothing. After that, I start to do more research, especially I lived the war. I saw everything. I saw people dying in the street. I saw the bombs when I'm walking in the street, a lot of bombs come. I saw all of that. I said, okay, that's really very interesting things I need to talk about to show the people why the media using these children. This is not the children's job. The children should have a lot of rights, the human rights for children. It's a lot. And the Syrian children, they have nothing. They should have a right to live, but they don't have this right. They should have a right to have a shelter, but they don't. The idea started from here. And after that, I start to do more research. I get a lot of information about it. And in the end, what I believe, and to the stage I arrived until now in my research, it started as a political games. the political using the media using the children, because it's the easy way to affecting people's, it's the children. Everyone feels so emotional with the children. We all feel emotional with the children. We can't just see children, especially during the winter in refugees camps in Turkey or in Lebanon, when it's snowing, without shoes, without shelters, without nothing. We all feel emotional for these children, but no one knows what the story is behind these children, how their life, why they arrived to this place. All this story, it's including in my research. It started from here. And after that, I start, because I'm so passionate about it, I'm so interested about it, I start to make it a little bit wider, how the people react about these children, what's the big political decisions taking after posting these images, especially like attacking Syria. It's not just in Syria, in Sudan, in Palestine, in Yemen, all this country. All time, suddenly we can see all the news posting exactly the same image. Newspaper, all the TVs, all the news channel posting exactly the same image, just to affecting people's feeling. And after that, they make very big decisions and make everyone say, oh, this is the right decision to attack Syria. This is the right decision because the people dying in Syria, the government killing the children. But that's not a real story. It's completely different. Because all time say, especially the European people say, oh, we are feel so sorry for these children, especially the children traveling by the sea to arrive to Europe. But now it's more than 12 years during the Syrian war. It's impossible to get any visa to be in Europe, to arrive safe to Europe. How we feel emotional with them, and we need to attack the government, but we don't want to help these children to arrive safe to England, or not just to England, to Europe in general. We are pushing them to use this way and die. And that's really very harmful. They don't have choice. They stay in Syria, they will killed, or they will travel and they will die. It's both. It's the end. The end story. It's the same. They can't really enjoy their childhood. They can't really enjoy to have like small toys, have shoes. What they ask just for shelters and shoes or clothes. That's what they ask for, but they couldn't get it. And yeah, that's in general about my research. This is the area I'm trying to include it in my research. It's children, why media using children, and why political using the media to use the children.
And in terms of your PhD and your research, what's your biggest challenge?
For me, the biggest challenge every time when I need to do more research and search for the children's image during the war. I need to prepare myself at least a week before I do this research, because when I put on Google children's in war, I can get very, very, very sad images, very harmful images, especially because I lived in Syria and I saw that. I saw that in real. That will affect me. I'm not just doing research. I can feel about every image I will use or I just see when I'm doing my research. This is very, very hard things for me, because that really I'm trying to prepare myself for that and still affecting me all time. But this is part of my research to be reality. I don't want just to do any research and, okay, I done my PhD, I get the certificate and it's done. I will not do that. This research, it's really hard to continue and finish it, but I will not stop because it's part of my experience. It's part of my life. Especially I have little girl. All time I imagine, what if we stayed in Syria? Maybe my daughter, it will be her image will be one of this image I'm watching every day on the news. It's really touching me because I said, okay, I will not stop. At least in future, especially during the earthquake in Turkey, this is a very big challenge happened. A lot of children kidnapped from the hospital just because they posting their picture on media. This is another challenge. Why we need to post the image, the complete image for these children? Why we didn't blur their face? Okay, we know these children suffering. We know these children not in nice place. But why we want to show everyone these children? And that will stick with them until they grown up. Maybe in future they will have amazing future, but this image will stick with them forever. And forever will affect them. I think the other thing with the time, maybe this image will be less affecting with people, because we see all time, especially now in the war between Israel and Palestine, every day millions image we can see every day. It's very big challenge, because anything for children is very big challenge. It's very hard. All of that, I'm trying to include how much I can in my research. It will be very wild. It will be very big. But because I need to touch all these areas just to show at least little bits are real stories. My research, it will be, the next step, it will be to interview the people, the refugees people here, arrive to England, and talk about their journey, and talk about some images, if I can meet these children. We saw the images on the news channel.
Thank you very much, Kinda. And can you tell us about life as a PhD student at the University of Liverpool?
It's not easy, but in the same time, because I'm really enjoying what I'm doing, I feel it's really deserved. Especially now, I am the well-being ambassador for 2024. And that's another thing I'm really enjoying, because it's the same. It's touching my experience, especially the new student coming from different countries, a new language for them, to feel a little bit lonely. They are away from their family, because I lived all this feeling, I can't understand them when I'm talking to them. That's make it more interesting, the life in university, when meeting new people. Just, oh, I know what you are talking about. Not just say it because I want to make them feel better. I really understand when they say we feel lonely, we missed our family, we feel we can't continue. All this feeling, I completely understand. And when we are talking with them, they know I had exactly the same experience. They believe it more. I'm trying to be a little bit more active in university to just helping people pass all the experience I get to the other student. It's nice. It's really nice experience. It's need a lot of work to be a PhD student, need a lot of time just doing research. I'm trying to make a little bit balance between my daughter. When she's in school, I'm trying to finish my work, spending little time with her. But I'm really enjoying being in university, meeting with another student, enjoying many events, many activities. You will see me everywhere in the university, but I'm happy with that.
Brilliant. Thank you very much, Kinda. Well, thank you very much for coming to speak with us, and we wish you the very best with your PhD, and we look forward to finding out about what happens with your future.
Thank you so much. Thank you. And yeah, maybe we'll meet in future to talk about my research when it's finished.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
That brings us to the end of this episode of Original Ideas, looking at the link between children's rights and academic research. Some incredible stories from our guests. Thanks to Professor Helen Stalford from Liverpool Law School and Liverpool PhD student Kinda Ali. If you want to find out more about anything you've heard, just head to liverpool.ac.uk/research, where you can also sign up to our monthly research newsletter, which includes updates on events, opportunities to work with us, and much more. And please do follow and rate the Original Ideas podcast, and you'll get the latest episodes as soon as they're released. Thanks for listening. Talk to you again soon.